At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 83 of the Knowing Will podcast. And bizarrely, I've started this podcast because Matt is out of office, as you can probably see already. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm all right, thank you, mate. And you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm surprised that I think for the first time in, what, getting on for 2 years of this podcast, it's actually you who's not where they usually are, rather than me. Because that's
it has happened once before.
Wasn't a real podcast though, was that? Or was that?
No, we did do quite a few of the car reveals, didn't we, when I was away?
Yeah.
But yeah, normally it's Jamie with the jet setting lifestyle. But yeah, this week I'm currently back out with Alfa Romeo, all in F1 team, Sauber Esports. So I'm currently in a Swiss hotel. I mean, if ever there was a podcast where you didn't want to see my face, it's this one, because I've been awake now for about 16 hours. So yeah, if you want to go check out, there will be links to Spotify, everything like that down below. As you will probably also be able to tell, I'm apparently making this a bit of an ASMR show this week. I obviously probably got people in hotel rooms right next to me, so I don't really think they want to listen all night to us to ramble on about the goings on for the Mexican Grand Prix. But yeah, check out links in the description below, of course. Spotify, Bybit, F1 merch, all that good stuff, and all be linked down there as always, and of course timestamps as well if you want to skip forward to any point in the show. But yeah, Jamie, start us off then. You've taken the lead today. I'm
yeah,
liking this.
So Mexican Grand Prix weekend, of course. Pre-weekend though, we had a bit of news regarding your hosts, actually, Alfa Romeo, or more specifically Sauber, which has been kind of the worst kept secret for all of the year, really. Ever since the Audi rumblings have started, it's kind of been like, oh, they're going to go to they're going to take over Sauber, which has now been officially confirmed for 2026. But they're properly, but they're what, a title sponsor from next year, isn't it?
No.
Oh, is that not right?
So Alfa Romeo, if I remember correctly, and I really hope I'm not leaking information I shouldn't be by saying this, because you never quite remember what you're told in confidence. I'm pretty certain it's Alfa Romeo's contract ends at the end of next year.
Yeah,
anyway.
Actually,
good. That's reassuring. Unless I've accidentally told you this
as well.
You might
have told me already. Yeah. You might actually get arrested halfway through this.
Exactly. But yeah, Audi though don't officially step in as a engine supplier till 2026. But it looks like from the end of 2023, they're going to slowly be buying more and more of a stake into Sauber, of course, once Alfa Romeo have gone, which should then obviously mean by the time we get to 2026, they will, I think it's have a 51% stake in Sauber as well there. And of course, you know, it makes no sense for Audi to rename the team before they're powering the cars, because how ridiculous would that look if it's an Audi Sauber Formula One car with Ferrari power units?
Yeah, so I don't know. Will they go back to Sauber for those 2 years, I guess?
Yes. It's
cool.
Looking like they'll go back to Sauber for 2024, 2025.
That's very cool. I missed the Sauber name.
But that's not... Yeah, that's not insider information. That's just what we're assuming at the moment.
Yes. And yeah, 2026, of course, the new engine regs, that's when they're coming in. And the other big manufacturer that there's been lots of talk about is Porsche. And yeah, they're kind of getting into their Williams a little bit as well, which is another bit of pre-weekend news. It's not anything like official yet, but those are the sort of the murmurs from the paddock, which, you know, there's no smoke without fire. That's probably going to happen. Porsche and Williams, that's an interesting one as well. Obviously, we see Williams kind of moving away from Mercedes more and more towards Red Bull, it has been, but potentially Porsche Williams, maybe Porsche taking the Red Bull powertrains eventually. never know.
No, that's definitely
actually,
not happening.
That's not actually happening, is it? I forgot about that.
No. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's a bit weird, isn't it? Because, of course, what we tend to forget is the fact that this isn't the Williams of old, you know, that was fiercely independent and all this, that and the other. You know, Williams nowadays is literally just... Obviously, they got bought out by Doralton Capital a couple of years ago. Doralton Capital, are an investment firm. They'll look to flip that team for a profit and prove they got money back on their investment. And obviously, it makes perfect sense for them. You know... Again, we don't really want to lose the Williams name itself, do we, from Formula One?
No.
But Porsche Williams, you know, they're both companies that have been heavily sponsored by Martini back in the day. You get the Martini liveries back, come on. And I think, you know, it's kind of interesting, though, when you sort of look at the broader picture inside F1, because what we're going to very quickly find is, without any new teams, obviously Porsche and Audi are effectively going to have two teams, and they're kind of under one, mm-hmm. the VW Group umbrella. Obviously, Red Bull have got two Formula One teams in Red Bull and AlphaTauri. Obviously, Mercedes have still got a fair share of control, you know, to a certain degree with Aston Martin. Obviously, Ferrari still have a fair amount of control over Haas. Then you're kind of just left with McLaren, aren't you? And one other team that I'm forgetting. And Renault, sorry,
Alpine.
Yeah. But
yeah.
We're kind of stepping into quite a weird space, aren't we? Where, theoretically, when you look like that... It kind of just looks like Haas could get left behind.
Yeah, unless Ferrari really want to kind of back them up. But yeah, it remains to be seen, really. Because yeah, you've got all these manufacturers. Effectively, you've got five or six factory teams. And
well,
a lot of them
that,
have,
isn't it, really?
To have then a junior team as well.
Yeah.
Which is kind of mad. But yeah, Haas, hopefully for them, they find some big backing. They've obviously got a new title sponsor for next year as well. Which hopefully goes better than the previous two title sponsors that they've had. And yeah, we'll have to wait and see. 2026, though, it feels a long way away, but we'll be there in no time, to be fair.
We will. Episode 400 out of the show.
His fourth or fifth title by then, however many it will be.
Yeah.
Hamilton will be still
gunning for number eight.
To the actual racing that happened in Mexico City this weekend. And... Yeah, qualifying began with no real surprises. We just had the Williams and both Aston Martins and Mick Schumacher as well, who set exactly the same time as Sebastian Vettel, but both of them were out anyway. So it's kind of like sums up their seasons, barring Seb's little renaissance in the last few weeks. Yeah, they're both with each other all the time, but both being terrible. So there we go.
No, it was weird, wasn't it? Because, of course, we had sort of the highs of Aston Martin last weekend, and then they just didn't really deliver here. But, of course, we've always known Mexico to be a bit of a weird circuit, and it's never, prior to now, really favoured Mercedes-powered cars anyway. But, yeah, I mean, it didn't really come... To be honest, there weren't many surprises across the board out in Q1 or Q2. Of course, both Aston Martins, Williams, Mick Schumacher, is quite a common thing. You know, Williams, pretty much always, both cars are out in Q1. Mick's not often delivering on a Saturday, and then both Aston Martins, you know, Stroll is not a qualifier, and Seb has struggled at times this year. And then it was kind of a similar story in Q2, wasn't it? Of course, Daniel Ricciardo out, Zhou Guan Yu, Yuki Tsunoda quicker than Pierre Gasly, but both of them out. And of course, Kevin Magnussen as well, who had grid penalties for this race. So I think Haas were a little bit gutted that he made it out of Q1 instead of Mick and then started at the back anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the only real, what you could call a slight surprise was Bottas getting in Q3. But the Alfa Romeo did look quick all weekend, so yeah.
Well, Bottas looked quick in that Alfa Romeo.
Mm. Yeah, he was weirdly on it. Sadly for him, it didn't deliver that many points, but I'm sure he'd be glad to be back in them at all, since first time since Canada, I believe, for him.
Yes.
So,
it has been a dry spell.
It was the classic top nine plus one extra, which was Bottas this time.
Bottas is weak to shine.
Yeah, to get 1 point. Well done.
Shine he did
when
we got into Q3,
well.
Though, didn't he? Because, I mean, the real talk of the town was... how quick Mercedes were looking. But Bottas splitting those Ferraris in P6. That was probably one of the qualifying performances of the year in the dry.
Yeah, I'm racking my brain, but I think felt very impressive. Like, the Ferraris were just not on it at all. I was so surprised by... Yeah, this is one thing Ferrari have been good at this year, it is qualifying. Obviously, Sainz got pole position last time out, and Leclerc's had the most poles all year of anyone. So the fact they were suddenly fifth and seventh on, I guess it's an anonymous track, but it didn't favour their turbo, supposedly. But yeah, they were just not on it.
They must have turned the engine down. They must have turned the engine down a lot because they were worried about the lack of oxygen.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can sensibly think of for them. I mean, the turbo as well might have been affected based on the reduced air pressure, but you can only imagine they must have had to turn the engine down just to try and make it, or they understepped the mark even. Yeah, over sort of compensated or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, they were just, I mean, it was not, they were never really in the fight all weekend, were they really?
No, they were, well, sort of took the role Mercedes have been taking most of the year by just chilling in fifth and sixth, not really doing very much in the race. Yeah, they were about 40 seconds ahead of the midfield, about 30 seconds behind the top four, which must have been pretty boring for the drivers, to be fair. But yeah, one little shout out to Sainz for beating Leclerc, fair play.
He's been weekend. Again.
It's a shame. Shame the car pace
didn't he?
Wasn't there?
Yeah, no, exactly. It was a shame you couldn't sort of try and capitalize on that. But I mean, yeah, Max Verstappen though, as probably I think most of us were expecting, apart from me who put Leclerc pole. Max Verstappen, Max Verstappen obviously fastest there, 3/10 clear though of George Russell, who ended up P2. Of course, Hamilton invalidated his first run, but still recovered to P3 ahead of course the local home hero in Sergio Perez. Then obviously Sainz, Bottas, Leclerc 5th, 6th, 7th, Lando Norris in P8 ahead of both Alpine. So again, you know, they've been a bit up and down in recent weeks, haven't they? But they were quietly kind of back where you'd expect them to be, at least on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. And we've seen that top nine so many times. Of the top three teams, plus both Alpines and Norris. So no real surprise.
So top four teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, true. so yeah, that was qualifying. Got to Sunday. I didn't watch any pre-race, but from what I can tell...
Nor did I. I literally got... Because I had to drive to Heathrow that evening. I literally got to where I was staying as they were going around the formation lap.
Oh, I unfortunately I got to watch lap two. So probably the most exciting part of the race I missed.
We both missed the start, did we?
Yeah. But yeah.
That's reassuring.
I saw a replay of the start a few times.
Talk me through it.
Yeah, we had Verstappen obviously on pole, two Mercedes. There was lots of talk about, oh, Russell's going to take out Verstappen because that's what he does now, apparently.
I loved the memes.
Yeah. It is funny how quickly the enemies shift around in F1.
This is definitely a podcast we're going to do over the winter of just the titanic shifts in people's perception of F1 drivers, seemingly if they do something once.
Yeah, yeah. It's very amusing and very, probably quite toxic, to be fair. But no, Russell
quite
did not
toxic.
Take out... Well, it's incredibly toxic, isn't it? Russell did not take out anyone on the first lap, but he did drop to fourth because... Yeah, he kind of, I don't know, watching it back, I kind of think he was a little bit scared of Lewis on his inside and potentially kind of bailed, and then that gave him a really bad run to allow Perez to overtake into turn four. So yeah, Verstappen just drove off. Both Red Bulls were on softs, both Mercedes on medium tyres. And yeah, Verstappen held the lead, Hamilton up to second, Perez third, Russell, I don't know, quite poor. I thought it was quite poor car positioning, but then I'm sat here in my chair at home, not on a racetrack in a Formula One car. So who am I to judge?
Yeah.
But there we go.
I mean, I think the big thing was I'm sure George did have a talking to last week, obviously after COTA, where the team just told him, look, there's three races to go of the year. We kind of just need to get both cars cleanly home and hope Ferrari chuck results away if we want to try and just squeeze ahead of them. Of course, you want to beat Lewis in the championship as well. Just get through the first few corners of these Grand Prix without doing anything. And I'm sure when he saw Hamilton on the outside, that was the last person he'd want to crash into down at turn two.
Very true. And yeah, straight away, kind of saw the classic Mexico thing of all the cars. I don't know if they were struggling with cooling, but it was kind of like... they couldn't follow that closely. The gaps kind of spread pretty fast all across the field, really. The leaders were 1.5 to 2 seconds apart. Hamilton did stay with Verstappen quite well in the first stint, but you kind of get the feeling that Verstappen was just holding him at an arm's length.
Yeah, and this was kind of the weird thing, wasn't it? Because by no means am I a professor of physics or anything like that. But sort of in my head, I'd kind of hyped up this race weekend as sort of being, well, we've got the ground effect. There's less air pressure. So, of course, there's less air being pushed out of the way. You know, really the ground effect, I kind of hoped in my head would be even more effective, sort of what it was designed to do. And that could mean that the cars could stay really close. And it kind of just had the opposite effect of, obviously, there was less air being pushed away, which meant the ground effect was even less effective than normal because there was less to kind of suck them to the ground.
Yeah, there's less air there to create the downforce, effectively. And we kind of saw that, I guess, with the previous generation of cars, it was more like the engines needed cooling down because they couldn't follow.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like another pre-weekend thing we forgot to mention. Mexico did extend to 2025 its contract. I think it was due this year, actually. So it's good for Mexico, but it's one of those tracks that I think we can do without, to be honest.
What they need to do is dig a big hole and put it at sea level.
Can you imagine an underground F1 race? That would be so sick.
That would be so dangerous.
Yeah. But then they race in a Monaco tunnel.
Yeah, that's not underground.
Well, it's undercover. Anyway, let's move on from that tangent. I think, basically, I was saying this to the mates I was watching the race with, like, they'll just keep extending while Perez is on the grid, and then as soon as he's gone, they'll cut Mexico off, I feel like.
But that being said, fair play, they know how to put on a party.
Oh, they do, yeah. It's a great time for the Mexican fans who are there, and everyone who's there, really. But from an entertainment point of view, it never really throws up good races, I don't think.
No. And it's kind of that weird thing, isn't it, where, you know, Mexico, you kind of expect on paper, could be that race. Because the thing was, what always made Mexico quite interesting was the fact that it was less predictable. But it kind of then became less predictable for a couple of years, and then everyone would kind of guess exactly how it would be less predictable, so then it was no longer less predictable. You just expected someone different to win.
It was different, which is, but predictable, yeah.
Yeah, predictably different, which is kind of weirdly... I mean, it's Formula One fans, isn't it? We can't even settle for predictably different. We just want things to be unpredictable.
Yeah.
But it's a vicious circle, isn't it, Jamie? The circle of a Formula One track. But like you said, you know, I don't think when Checo does eventually call it quits that track will be there much after he's gone. You know, it's certainly got a lot of history. But yeah, I just don't see why they would keep it, because they're everyone is only there for Checo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess it's, unless another Mexican driver comes out of the woodwork somewhere, but there's no real candidates in the youth systems of Formula One.
Bring Gutierrez right back.
Yeah, Gutierrez. I've been on a bus with him.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the first half of the race, as we said, nothing really happened. There was a bit of scrapping in the lower midfield, nothing really in the points. But one of the things that did happen was Gasly almost took out Stroll and then got a 5-second penalty. Well, Stroll had to get forced off the track. Gasly also went off the track as well at turn four. Got himself a
It was a Stroll style move
it
on
was,
Lance Stroll.
It was. But yeah, that puts Gasly up to 10 penalty points, I believe.
10 penalty points.
Yeah, which if I was him, I would just take someone out in Brazil and then get your race ban in Abu Dhabi, go into Alpine with a clean slate. Deliberate red card.
The thing is, do you think anyone can ever go into Alpine with a clean slate? Like, got to be a lot of guilt on your mind.
Yeah, you've agreed to or get into bed with
already,
Alpine, so you've got some very questionable life.
Self-loathing or, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know when his penalty points will expire, but I imagine he won't deliberately get two more.
I can't see him no-breaking everyone into Turn 1 at Interlagos, I'll be honest.
It's
not where my money's at. There's
bottle jobs when it comes to penalty points anyway, because the amount of times someone's been on 10, and then they get one when it's usually two. So
yeah, they won't ban him. It just won't happen. No. Like, the thing is, well, the only time they try and do that is when they're actually deliberately making an example out of someone, and Gasly's not really a driver that you need to do that with.
No.
Most of his have been under safety car, haven't they?
Oh yeah, they have. He got penalty points for Suzuka, didn't he? Despite almost being
and
killed
Kota.
By FIA.
Yeah, and Kota last weekend as well for falling too far back. So it's a bit of a weird one, but I think I don't see him getting a race ban either. But yeah, 5-second penalty for Gasly. Then we kind of started to see the pit stops, didn't we, of course. Like you said, Verstappen started the race on softs. He went to lap 26, then came onto mediums. Hamilton then only was able to extend his mediums 4 laps longer. But by that point, of course, Verstappen had pitted before him, was on fresh medium tyres. Hamilton then had to go onto hards. So Verstappen then not only had had a quicker tyre throughout most of the start of the Grand Prix, had 4 laps where he was on much quicker tyres, and then had quicker tyres pretty much to the end of the Grand Prix as well. It was... I understand what Mercedes were trying, and hindsight is a beautiful thing, but if you were them, would you have done the same thing?
No. No, I don't think so. I guess it depends on motivation. If they wanted a safe, like, hold station race, then yeah, they did the right thing, absolutely. But yeah, if you're going for wins, which... when you qualify second and third, you kind of are, aren't you? Like,
yeah,
I don't,
you've got to be
why,
trying to think about it.
With one of their cars, they could have extended the mediums and gone softs at the end, like we saw a few of the midfield do.
George wanted to.
Yeah, yeah, Russell wanted to.
George,
I think they
was
were
so
scared.
Vocal about this.
Mercedes, obviously, we've seen so much volatility between teammates in Mercedes with differing strategies, specifically 2014-16 time with Hamilton Rosberg.
Yeah.
But they absolutely hate giving drivers different strategies to each other, because then if, I don't know, if Russell does come through and win, Hamilton would be feeling robbed because he was ahead.
I don't think
strategy.
He would, though. I don't think he would with George, especially in the position the team's in at the moment. Of course, I'm thinking back to like Australia at the start of the year, where Russell lucked into a safety car that really did gift him the podium that Hamilton deserved, yeah, all weekend. I don't genuinely believe, I think this is the first time probably since Michael Schumacher left the team at the end of 2012 where there's kind of no, maybe for a bit of 2017 as well, but there's kind of no resentment or deep-rooted, not toxic rivalry, but certainly tense rivalry.
Yeah, I don't think there's any tension between Dan Hamilton and Russell. But if Russell does go on to win the race with that different strategy, a win is different for Hamilton. Like, he's been trying so hard to win this season. Obviously, he always tries hard to win. That sounds a bit stupid to say. But if he, I don't know, if you're in Hamilton's shoes, you are ahead and you get put on a worse, when what in hindsight is a worse strategy, your teammate goes on to win on the better strategy, you would be feeling like robbed by that, I think. And yeah, he could probably take it in the short term, but like Mercedes can definitely do without those problems, which is why they always put their drivers on the same strategy.
But they got to try and win a race.
They have, and they should have done, I think. And
yeah,
potentially
really gone,
yeah,
away.
The medium hard strategy, they were basically banking on Red Bull having to 2-stop, which the predictions were all 1-stops even from soft to medium. So yeah, it was a strange call to start them on mediums. Obviously you've backed yourself into a corner then, because you can't really do anything other than try and stretch it like 50 laps and go to soft at the end. But yeah, it was a shame. It was just overly conservative, I think, from Mercedes, which we see far too often from them.
The thing was as well, wasn't it, of course, because even if their just whole focus is we want to try and beat Ferrari by the end of the year, even if they gambled it and rolled the dice, they were so far ahead of Ferrari anyway, they would have finished third and fourth. Like, the only way it could have gone wrong is if one of them got a puncture.
Yeah, yeah. And like,
just
if one of them
dice.
Stays out 45, 50 laps, a safety car hands it to you then. Like, it's just,
yeah,
it's a risk worth taking. Obviously,
you've got it, yeah,
hindsight, but yeah.
It was frustrating, wasn't it?
It seemed like they didn't really commit to either and just went in the middle and didn't really achieve anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, someone else that might have been a bit frustrated, though, poor Yuki Tsunoda. Daniel Ricciardo, probably rather worryingly, he took another car out and it was still, his race of the year.
Yeah.
Talk me through that incident.
Yeah, I was not best pleased because Yuki was in my fantasy team, which is fun. Yeah, Tsunoda's just chilling in 11th
place. I've just realised as well, sorry, Jamie, to be very, very unprofessional halfway through the show, I've got no idea what my password is on F1 Fantasy, so there's going to be no way I
right.
can find out.
So
how
I guess I'm on that as
week.
Well, all of it, brilliant. yes, Tsunoda into turn four. Well, it wasn't really turn four, Tsunoda was just ahead, it was kind of turn six, 2 corners later. Ricciardo just absolutely sent it from nowhere, was never really close enough alongside, and then Tsunoda gets launched into the air and is out of the race with side pod and floor damage. And yeah, that was very, very frustrating as a massive Yuki Tsunoda fan for one weekend until he got my team.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, Ricciardo obviously at fault, gets a 10-second penalty. But because he was on those fresh softs, because he did the strategy that Russell should have done, he just blitzed it. He went so fast in the second stint. Yeah, that was for 11th when he took out Tsunoda. He then went on to pass Norris, then Alonso, but kind of, and then Ocon, and then gaps gaps 10 seconds on everyone. So he did end up finishing 7th despite the penalty. But the fact he probably gained about 25 seconds of race time compared to Ocon, who was effectively the next best of the rest. Yeah, that strategy was the one, I think. And it's a shame that more people didn't try it. But I think it was just Ricciardo and Vettel in the end.
Yes, yeah. No, it was a good strategy call. And yeah, just obviously a shame that Yuki Tsunoda was kind of a target in Daniel Ricciardo's firing line. Yeah, I did also love as well, I don't know if you've seen this clip, that when Ricciardo was lining up for a move on Esteban Ocon, he literally does a finger gunshot at him before he overtakes him.
He's so sad.
Did you not? On his onboard. Well, the thing is, you say that, but this weekend, it was like Daniel Ricciardo's version of exactly what Seb did last weekend, where the pressure's off, you go out there, enjoy yourself, and you get a good result.
Well, and kill a young Japanese man. At the same time,
I don't recall Seb doing that.
No,
Kota,
true. Seb didn't do that.
Maybe.
I don't think Tsunoda enjoyed it as much as Ricciardo did. Let's put it that way.
No, I don't think he did. Poor little Yuki. But, I mean, yeah, really, of course, I was kind of hoping that might bring out a safety kind of just spice up the race somewhat towards the end. But the only other thing that happened was obviously a fraud Nando Alonso, a mechanical failure towards the
Get
end.
Your comments in. Those are the ones.
I'm going to get those. Leave them down below. Get salty with
me. Alonso and Hamilton were beefing actually before the race. That was quite funny.
They were. I thought that was incredible because Hamilton won that beef.
Actually, Kimi Raikkonen won it because Hamilton bought a 07, which is irrelevant. So,
well, out of the two of them,
they screwed themselves out of a title completely.
They exactly. It was a strange time down at McLaren, but. Yeah, I mean, Alonso, of course, very, very lucky again. I mean, he's just had a frustrating year, hasn't he? I mean,
He was definitely not exactly
an Alonso enthusiast.
He was at least getting 8th, probably getting 7th. He was quite far ahead of Ocon before he had the problems.
Do you reckon he would have got Ricciardo?
I think Ricciardo probably would have got him, but
yeah,
maybe with the penalty, yeah. I don't know. It could have been 7th or 8th, which would have been a nice little haul for my fantasy team as well. But obviously not, because if I own them, that means they have to DNF. yeah, very unlucky. He said in his interview, what a year, another DNF for car 14 and stuff, which is one of his slander names on Twitter, which is ironic. yes, very unfortunate. And that was kind of it. Bought out a VSC that changed nothing. And that was kind of the end of the race then.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, Max Verstappen, a comfortable race victory in the end, breaks the record for the most wins in a Formula One season. Again, you know, it's a new record. Don't get me wrong. Fair play to him. It'll stay in the record books, I'm sure, for a couple of years at the very least, depending on how OP next year's Red Bull car is as well. Does kind of lose its weight a bit, doesn't it, when you think he's, 20 races into a year and Seb managed to get, would have got 14 in a 20-race season and Michael Schumacher probably would have got 16 in a 20-race season.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, hats off to, you know, he and Red Bull this year have been dominant in a way that, of course, we never even really saw at Mercedes, of course, because Bottas was always a lot closer to Hamilton or Ferrari were always a lot closer to Hamilton. And obviously, of course, Rosberg was always very close to Hamilton, with the exception of 2015. So it has been the perfect storm for Red Bull, hasn't it? You know, not trying to take away from Verstappen's achievement, but, you know...
But even so, they had very stiff competition at the start of the year from Ferrari until they just completely self-destructed basically every race.
At Imola, yeah. Round 4.
Imola onwards, it was poor. But, yeah. Yeah, very good season, obviously, for Max. Record-breaking.
Most points ever as well in the Formula
most
One season.
Most points ever.
Already, and he's still got two races to
they must
probably
be getting
score
pretty
another 52.
Close. They must be getting pretty close to most wins in a row for a constructor. Because they've won every race since Austria.
I think that's still... across seasons, wasn't it? If I remember correctly. I feel like McLaren Williams, 92-93.
Most consecutive wins by a constructor is 11 by McLaren in the 1988 season.
Oh, fair enough. So yeah, they must be right there then.
They must be very close.
They must be right there. If that was Austria, what was Austria? Around 10 of the year. They must have done... No, because Ferrari won Austria and Ferrari won Silverstone.
Austria was after Silverstone, was it not?
No, it was the week before.
Oh. Ah, here we go. Most consecutive wins. So they're on 9 right now, and the record is 11.
Yeah.
So yep. If they win the last two...
If you win the final two races, which is very possible, which is probably quite likely, to be honest.
Yeah.
They've just got to start next year without both cars blowing up, I suppose.
Yeah,
we will wait
ideal.
And see about that. But yeah, Max Verstappen, though, won the Mexican Grand Prix then. Now officially the most successful driver at Mexico. Technically already was, but Jim Clark had 3 wins, although one of them wasn't a real Grand Prix. Lewis Hamilton, P2. Sergio Perez gets another podium. Fair play to him. Obviously, his dad loving life once more. And I think really that's kind of just all we wanted to see on TV was Checo's dad vibing again. George Russell, I think, a bit gutted in P4 there. Sainz, Leclerc, Ricciardo, Ocon, Norris. And like you said at the start, Bottas finally getting more points on the board for Alfa Romeo there, even if it was just a one solitary one. But remember, Jamie told me a couple of weeks ago that Aston Martin would trounce Alfa Romeo.
I don't remember saying the word trounce.
I feel like that was the vibe.
I said Aston
that was
would
given
beat
up at the time.
Alfa Romeo, and I still stand by that.
Fair enough, you moron. Alfa Romeo all the way, baby.
Well, I hope Alfa do it, but they won't.
Well, I believe in them. Let's jump into the quiz, though. I did want to try and genuinely segue into it quite a while ago, but you cut me off before I had a chance.
Oh, well, I should have been more forceful then.
I should have been, but you know me. I'm a gentle soul. We've already spoke about, obviously, Sergio Perez. We even mentioned another one of the drivers on this list. Jamie, there are 6 drivers from Mexico to have raced in Formula 1. You have got 1 minute to name all of them for me. And I've just realised I can't do a timer. Because I've got notes on my phone. Your time starts now.
Well, Checo, Perez.
Yep.
Esteban Gutierrez.
Yep.
Pedro Rodriguez. Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yep.
Other Mexicans.
Yeah, 45 seconds. There's one that I hadn't heard of, and there's one that I had, but it's quite an obscure one.
Oh, they'll be super old, won't they? Anyone's dad ever raced? No, Checo's dad didn't look like a mud F1 driver, really.
He looks like he's a peak Formula 1 driver. 30 seconds, by the way.
What's a typical Spanish name or Mexican name?
Oh, God, Jamie, don't start this.
Fernandez.
No.
Rodriguez. I thought he said Rodriguez.
Rodriguez.
Can you tell me the decades?
70s, I think, for one of them, and then 50s or 60s for the other.
I've got no chance.
Three, two, one, over.
Yeah. Well, you I got the four well, I could have got.
You got the four that you should have got. One of them, I feel like when I say the name, you might realise, because he's actually been mentioned in the Formula One games before.
Oh, really? Who's that?
Yeah. Hector Rabach.
Who?
Can you remember what he was... Hector Rabach. Can you remember what he was famous for?
No. I didn't play Formula 1 games enough.
He was the last Formula 1 driver to race for his own team.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't... I only
Which,
played
of course,
one season
is the
team.
Intro... Is the intro to F1 My Team, I think, back on F1 2020, of course, when it first got introduced, that obviously he was the last driver back in the 70s. And the other one, which I hadn't heard of, was Moises Solana. Not sure if he's related to the cryptocurrency, but there we are.
Yeah, that was
I can't imagine he was.
Low effort quiz from Matt there. We want better next week.
It was, but I'm trying to work everything off a laptop this week, so it's not going to be pretty. Thank you very much.
Yeah, shall we move on to F1 Fantasy, which you cannot
well,
do
let's
anything
go,
for.
Do we not want to go Driver of the Day first? We're not going to stick to the schedule?
Let's do it.
Driver of the Day, Jamie 183. Who are we seeing? I think shout-outs... I mean, if he hadn't killed a small Japanese driver, it would be quite simply Daniel Ricciardo,
well,
wouldn't
he's
it?
The only one,
let's
didn't
be
he
fair. Yeah. But that I mean, one thing he did do was killing another driver. Really, we can't award Driver of the Day for that, can we?
Yeah, so...
Can we?
Because there's no candidates, I will go for Max Verstappen.
Okay, Jamie's going to pick favourites. I'm going to say Lewis Hamilton then. He actually made up places during the race.
Yep, yep.
No, I think...
The resident Hamilton fanboy has spoken.
I think Bottas as well deserves a shout-out. Of course, very, very strong qualifying. Lacked a bit in the race. You know, still the Bottas racecraft is lacking, unfortunately. I don't want to know how many times he got outbroke down into turn one, but, you know, picked up a point for Haas. For Alfa Romeo, even nonetheless. That's really bad.
Who's employing you this week?
I can't remember. Let's move over then. Well, Jamie's going to have to move over to F1 Fantasy. I have been able to log into my team. Okay. Luckily, my laptop knew already. How many points, Jamie183, did you score this week?
As we've already disclosed, there were two DNFs in the race, both of which were in my team.
I had one of them.
I'd had a pretty poor week, I think. I got 152.
Oh! I outscored you, but it was only by 4. And I felt really happy with my points.
Oh, what? So you want 156?
Yes. That is 152 plus 4.
Did you turbo signs?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I did as well. That was a good decision. I had Verstappen, Sainz turbo, and Ferrari, the classic trio. And then I had Alonso. And then I went a bit rogue with Tsunoda and Stroll. Which didn't get me many points.
Wise choice. No, I mean, I stuck with both Red Bulls, Sainz, Alonso, Bottas and Alpine, which, I mean, to be honest, if Alonso hadn't retired late on, that would have probably netted me some pretty handy points in the end. I would have
Alonso
probably been up towards
good.
About the 170 odd range, probably maybe 180.
All I need is Tsunoda finishes, he probably gets about 20 because he beat Gasly. Alonso finishes, he probably gets about 25, 30. I'm looking at 200 odd, but there we go. Ricciardo
exists.
There's
no way Gasly would have got that many points.
No, Tsunoda
because
would.
Tsunoda even, because he didn't gain any places during the race, did he?
But he beat his teammate out qualifying race.
That doesn't matter. Bottas beat his teammate and he scored me 7.
Oh, well, yeah, maybe not then. Yeah,
just,
but there
just
we go.
Trying to crush your dreams quickly.
Yeah, I'll run through everything because
please
Matt
do because I can't find it.
Mexico. My rank or my game week rank in Mexico was 1,698, which is above average, but not what I aspire to be in Matt's league, which now has 4,506 people. So fair play.
I feel like that's less than last week.
I do feel like that might be less. I think we've either got banned.
Have we lost people? Someone got DDoSed and banned from our league.
We should just remove everyone above me, I reckon.
I'm going to remove... Actually, can I remove people?
You probably
I
can.
I don't think I can.
Oh, wow. But yeah, the top team this week was Rosie V from Canada, who obviously mega drivered Verstappen with a turbo of science.
She would. I've still got a mega driver.
Then Red Bull is the team, which netted a 1-3, so decent. Albon, Bottas, and also Tsunoda. So it could have been even better if Ricciardo didn't exist, which sums up McLaren's season, really. That was 302
points.
Sums up
pretty much Formula One this year.
302 points to win. At second place, 301 points for Gioti Maya M. Sorry about your name, which I just butchered, but there we go. Also, Tsunoda. Everyone got screwed by me. I mean, this guy had Ricciardo as well as Tsunoda, so that must have been stressful.
I don't think people worry about F1 Fantasy the way you do, mate.
I only do because there was nothing else to care about in that race. I was like, where's Tsunoda? Max Mega Science. Alonso, Tsunoda, and Ricciardo. So two DNFs and still second place. Wow. Selwyn P in third. Chris Y in fourth. Selwyn P, other team, in fifth. So well, that's very good. Larry T, who I think is doing really well, but it's not Scuderia Wickham. It's a different team for Larry T in sixth place. Then Bashar I in seventh with Brant B. Mauro Valmaggia, those are some good reading from me, and Rosario Roldan, the two Argentinians in 9th and 10th. 248 was the points you needed to get top 10 this week. I got 158 too, so I was 96 points off.
If I'd make a driver max, I would have probably just about scraped that.
I might have done as well. Yeah, I would have done.
But you haven't got a mega driver left.
I haven't.
I do.
That's true. But yeah, that leaves the overall, which is pretty settled at this point of the season. We've still got the Volvo 240 17 Global 2021 in first. Quite a distance. Philip S, that is. Quite a distance ahead of the boy who cried wolf with Bryce G. ahead of Larry T. Oh, actually, that is his first team, which came... No, it isn't, sorry. It's a different team that came in the top 10 this week. But he's still third overall with Max T. It's all fallen apart for him. Although he might still finish second or first, which if he manages that after, what was it, Mega Hamilton in Spa, that would be very impressive. We've got DMG in fifth with Rosario Roldan sixth, ahead of Mihir S, Kevin L, Atia M, and Nihal V in 10th place. So you need 3,939 points to get top 10. I don't think I'm getting it.
So all I need to do is Mega Driver someone either in Brazil or Abu Dhabi who nets 300 points alone.
Yeah, yeah, which seems unlikely, to be honest.
I'm not going to count it out. I reckon there's still a top 10 overall in the books for me come the end of the year.
Yeah, that's our fantasy rundown. I believe I'm still trouncing Matt overall.
I believe you are. I believe you are.
309th for me, so that's all right.
I'm just outside the top 1,000, so definitely.
That is poor.
You sweat. you are also, I'm afraid, Jimmy, going to have to try and find the predictions for Apple, although to be fair, I don't think I want to hear them.
Yeah.
This week, because I think it is all but over, isn't it?
Almost, I think. I don't think it's quite. I haven't quite worked it out, but predictions recap.
There's 18 points available.
Matt had to go bold and do something different to what I was going to do, which was very safe and boring, but effective. So there we go. I went for a Verstappen pole, a Verstappen win with a Perez
4 points
and Leclerc second and third. So I got 5 points.
5 points. So you're on 69. Well done.
Nope.
Extra credit to you.
71, actually. 66.
Why?
Plus
you're on
five.
64. You're on 64.
It says 66 on mine.
Did it?
Yeah, it says 66 to 47.
I'm pretty certain. Okay, well, I'm not sure that's right. I've got the scores muddled up somewhere. The whole season's void.
Yeah, much like lap 58 in your mind.
That's an unnecessarily hurtful thing.
There we go. And I believe you went for a Leclerc pole, a Leclerc win.
None.
With it was Perez and Hamilton, but in the wrong order. So you got two points.
So I got 2 points. So how many points am I on?
49. 49. And I'm on 71.
So it's over.
So oh no.
18 points available
and
there's 22.
That is very powerful.
Oh no. If you see anything on Twitter from me in the next
couple
of... I don't think you can. I feel like there's going to be some rules.
Yeah, there's
play.
Some boundaries. I'll be nice. I'll be.
I feel like there's going to be an Alonso tweet on my account very, very soon. Oh, damn it.
I'll just boost the interactions.
Okay.
I'll achieve that for you, don't worry.
I mean, let's not beat around the bush, Jamie. Race ratings to finish us off.
It was
a bit dull, wasn't it?
It was.
A 3.5, a 4 out of 10.
I'd give it 3. I gave it a little 2 stars on your little community post. So
thank you very much. I'm going to give it a 3.5. Yeah, arguably one of the worst races of the year.
I think it probably is the worst. I haven't watched all of them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember all of them particularly.
No.
But I'm pretty sure it was the worst.
Probably very, very sadly. Anything else to add, though, Jamie, before we round this show out?
I don't believe so. Let me just.
I think we've done pretty well this week.
Twitter, real quick.
Yeah, see if anything controversial has gone on. I mean, we've got to mention the fact that Alonso did, in the end, get his P7 reinstated from COTA, but we both had brain cells, so we knew that would happen anyway. Apparently, the FIA don't. But
someone in NASCAR wall rode for P5.
Yes, Ross Chastain pulled off either 1,000 IQ move or the most redneck thing you've ever seen, but. As someone that is actually genuinely a fan of NASCAR, fair play to him, because that was such a critical move, and you could only ever get that in NASCAR, so they're going to be hyping up that for years.
If you haven't seen it, go watch it.
You have to have seen it by now. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It is everywhere at the moment. I mean, that will probably replace NASCAR now. They still focus on the 2007 Daytona 500 finish. They've finally got some replacement B-roll, which says it all. Yeah. It only took them 15 years. But, I mean, if Ross Chastain goes into next weekend and somehow wins this thing, that will be how he did it. That will be what he's remembered for. And I think whether he does or whether he doesn't, that car is probably going in the Hall of Fame anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So that's our NASCAR
chat. None of those words Jamie understood.
I was just
none of those
along.
Words. Jamie
smile
had no idea. Smile and wave, just like the penguins from Madagascar.
That's exactly what I was quoting. Thank you.
What a weird reference we've gone down.
That about rounds us up. And since I did the intro, I might as well outro it as well. So, yeah, thank
go
you for watching.
Go for it. Take it away.
Episode number 83 in the can. Only 100 episodes, two other JN183 tribute show.
We're going to do a 2-hour podcast of your greatest hits.
Oh, we should. That would be ideal. Yeah, let us know what you thought, your own race ratings, how you got on in fantasy, all that kind of stuff. I don't know how you outro these usually, but we'll see you next time for more Knowing Wheel.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.